from Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
During a time of unprecedented economic growth across the country, we lost four valuable years because of an ideological battle. That stops now.
We only have two choices. Either we raise some more revenues or we continue what we've done for the last 4 years, and that is decimate universities, decimate our social service system.
In this budget proposal are six or seven ideas that have to pass in order for this to work. Some of those include passing the progressive income tax. It includes legalizing recreational marijuana.
This is a constrained budget, more austere than I would like.
I can't agree with it. All I saw and heard was more spending.
Their communities are incredibly dependent upon the functionality of state government and the resources that come from state government. So I think that it's very important that if they don't want to walk down this road of revenue or want to have a revenue conversation, then they should be proposing cuts.
To get to fiscal stability and eliminate our structural deficit, there's no quick fix. It took decades to get us into this mess. It will take at least several years to get us out of it.
I would use the phrase magical thinking to describe this budget. We have to do some work, some serious work about dealing with our issues head on, notwithstanding his claims that we were looking at our issues and addressing them head on. We did not do that at all.
Governor J.B. Pritzker delivered his budget ideas to the General Assembly this week. He said it's an austere budget plan. Republicans are skeptical of that. On this episode of State Week, we will recap the governor's address and what is in that proposal. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, also Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio Statehouse Editor, and Daisy Contreras, IPR Statehouse Reporter. Joining us this week as well, Amanda Cass. She's the Associate Director of the Government Finance Research Center at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And Amanda, it's good to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll go around the table here first to start and get some ideas and some takeaways from the governor's plan from each of you. Brian, I'll start with you. We've been waiting for J.B. Pritzker to deliver this budget since he was elected, waiting to see how he would tackle the state's problems. What did you think of what he had to say?
Yeah, I've spent the last couple of days trying to think of a metaphor that is not the words kick the can down the road, because that is something we have heard just so much in state government. But this is really a placeholder budget, I think we heard from Governor Pritzker. He has a number of tax increases he wants to do because he wants to spend more money. He wants to begin keeping up with the promises he made on the campaign trail to spend more money on early childhood education, spend more money on higher education, do other things in government, as Democrats often want to do, expand programs. But Illinois is in a cash crisis. Even though we raised taxes a couple of years ago, the debt that we have accumulated is still growing, and the current year deficit and the future deficits are projected to continue growing. And so we heard Governor Pritzker, calling for new revenue, but also calling for more spending. As you said, he called this an austere budget, but that, I think, is rhetoric, really. I mean, it may be austere based on what he would like to do, but it still calls for more spending, and it really is a placeholder until he can get a graduated or progressive income tax through the General Assembly before voters, and if he has his way, approved by voters.
And Daisy?
And I think the response really from Republicans and from Democrats was very partisan. From the Republican side, House Minority Leader Durkin and Senate Leader Brady both say they like that the governor included them in a leaders meeting right before the budget address on Wednesday. This is a departure, I think, from what we've seen in the past, where leaders meetings were always just kind of like, are they going to happen or not? There are questions from other Republican lawmakers about where the money for funding will come from, as Brian mentioned earlier. There are definitely some proposals for revenue from legalizing sports betting and legalizing recreational marijuana, which together would bring in a little over $380 million. But these are things that are still up in the air. They have been included in discussions for many months now, but no actual bills have been filed. And it was also very interesting that Pritzker decided to invoke former Governor Henry Horner, who was governor during the Great Depression, and this was during his budget speech. Horner was considered a champion for the working poor, and he successfully pushed for a state sales tax. And Pritzker campaigned on what he called helping the state's working class and has been pushing for a progressive income tax.
Amanda, your thoughts?
I think that, you know, the kind of biggest item that was in his budget speech is not actually in the 2020 proposed budget, and that's the graduated income tax. You know, it would be a multi-year process to get that in place, and everything kind of seems contingent on that. And so, you know, as Brian said, I think this is somewhat of a placeholder budget because everything's resting on having a graduated income tax.
You agree with that, Charlie?
Yeah, I think so. And what struck me maybe more than the actual details was sort of the tone. It was a lot less aggressive. It was a lot more conciliatory, a lot more seeking compromise than the tone of Governor Rauner's budget addresses. And I think the reaction from the Republican leaders was positive. Yeah, they disagree with some of the details. As a couple of them mentioned, they're not the cuts in there they'd like to see. But on the other hand, I think the whole atmosphere, and you guys who are down there every day know better than I, but the whole atmosphere seems to have changed. There's more a sense of collegiality. There's more a sense of, well, we can work together. We're not going to agree on everything, but we don't really hate each other.
Yeah, and he doesn't have to be that way, really, when you think about it, because he has such control of, you know, Democrats have such control of the state legislature that if he wanted to just ram through legislation, he could do that. He likely will do it. We've seen the minimum wage go through, for example. But, Charlie, he doesn't have to necessarily reach out and offer that olive branch.
Well, if you look at it in the abstract, no, he doesn't. He could just ignore the Republicans. Chances are, like, infinitesimal that there's going to be any veto overrides. And even if there were, the Democrats can do it unilaterally. But on the other hand, as a practical political matter, you want Republicans on those roll calls to raise taxes, to make some of these pension adjustments so that it's bipartisan, so that I, as a candidate, next time around, as a Democratic candidate, can't be attacked by my Republican opponent for supporting these things without me being able to say, yeah, but so did these four or five Republicans.
Amanda,
you know, yeah. That's sort of a political cover, and that's the way stuff back in the day, back mm-hmm. in my day, that's the way the stuff always happened.
Amanda, I mentioned that the Republicans are critical of the governor and some of his ideas and whether or not this is truly an austere budget. Do they have a point when it comes to when you add up the numbers?
Yeah, I think so. So it's, you know, on the one hand, this was kind of presented as a treading water sort of budget, except that there's a number of different increases in spending in kind of expansions of programs. And they're paying for that, or the governor is proposing to pay for that additional spending and cover the existing budget hole by increasing taxes in a number of ways, but then also changing the current pension laws to decrease the state's required pension contribution by about $1 billion.
And Brian, that's, you know, again, the kicking the can down the road idea. That's what a lot of people think when they hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is where, you know, maybe we can, I don't know if we're going to talk about this later, we can talk about it now. The idea of not putting this money in the pension systems, it's not as though they're going to run out of money in the next year or anything like that. And it does, but you have to think about the magic of compounding interest, right? And if you think back to your home economics or whatever that class was called when we took it in school, right? You have to put money away and count on it to grow. And so much of what the pension funds are counting on to be able to meet their obligations in future years is this growth. And by not putting that money in now, it is compounding how much we're going to have to put in the future. Someone shared with me a quote this week from John Bauman, who was the head of TRS back in the aughts when the legislature was considering doing something similar and in fact did take a number of pension holidays during that time. And he basically said that for every dollar you don't put in the pension funds today, in 40 years later, that's going to be $11 we have to make up. And so Governor Pritzker says, well, you know, only focusing on the $878 million we're going to be reducing in the pension payment we make this year doesn't count all these other things we're going to do. We're going to issue bonds, sort of in our arbitrage scheme, thinking that, well, you can get a better interest rate on the bonds than on the other pension debt. You know, we're going to transfer assets into the pension system. Perhaps the Thompson Center would finally be, if not sold, then transferred in. You know, we can get Illinois State Investment Boards in the real estate management business, where I think they've been trying to get out of that. Potentially even move the tollway in there, although there are constitutional issues potentially with that. But does that may boost the assets on paper. Does that really solve the problem? Are we making things worse in the future? These are questions the legislature will have to sort out as they decide whether to pursue this option.
And Amanda, I know you've written about this as well, so I want to get your take on it. You've talked about in the past the term pension crisis, that it might be misleading.
Yeah, I think – so I want to be very clear of when I'm saying that, you know, we think this notion of a pension crisis is not accurate. That's not to say that there's not serious problems and fiscal challenges, but this kind of – I think of a pension crisis as a situation in which the pension systems have literally run out of assets and checks to retirees get halted. That's not the case in Illinois. That's not going to be the case tomorrow. We have a serious problem in that the pension systems have very low kind of funded ratios, so they're underfunded. But then on the other hand, we have a kind of fiscal issue with the state's budget, and many see the state's required pension contributions as crowding out other spending. And so these two things are in tension, because if you wanted to just kind of boost the finances of the pension system, the solution to that is to dramatically increase how much money the state's paying into the pension system. If you want to solve the budget problem, which is and free up money that could be spent on other areas of the budget, like higher education, early education, human services, then kind of the solution to your problem would be to cut the pension contributions. And so these two things, I think, are in tension. I would argue it's not a crisis. They're both serious issues. They both will require some action and some sacrifice, but they're also in conflict with one another.
Shirley, you agree with that?
Yeah. And the difficulty is the reason we're where we are, and I think, what is the number for next year? Without changing the law, we're supposed to put in like $9 billion into the pensions?
Yep.
And of that money, roughly three-quarters of it is money to make up for contributions that haven't been made over the last 100-plus years. And the difficulty, as Brian said, the dollars that weren't put in 80 years ago, 90 years ago, didn't earn interest all that time, and that adds to the problem. The value of the benefits that are earned in any one year, I think they're called normal costs, are a lot less than $9 billion. I'm guessing it's probably like $2 billion. And if that were the case, we could handle that pretty easily. But it's this backlog that has built up over more than a century that's causing the difficulties.
Daisy, let me ask you, because you were talking to a lot of different folks with reaction up there. Mm-hmm. Did you hear much about the pensions? Did that come up much, or was it other issues that they were focused on?
I think, again, partisan reaction. A lot of Democrats were saying that, yes, over time, you know, we need to make some sacrifices, but in order to reach a solution to this issue, we have to go with what the governor is proposing.
Let me ask you as well, because new revenue is listed in this budget plan, and that is some things that are not law yet. A few of them, marijuana, sports betting. Talk about those, what the governor is proposing there.
So right now the numbers are just kind of out there. It's estimated that sports betting would bring in $200 million just from licensing fees, 20 licenses at $10 million each, and the licensing fees would go toward the operating budget. And for marijuana, the same thing. The projected revenue from licenses is $170 million. But it was very interesting to me. Immediately following the budget address, I spoke to State Representative Kelly Cassidy, a Chicago Democrat, who has spearheaded legalizing recreational marijuana for a few years now. And she has a bill in the works. And she said she had no idea where the Pritzker administration had gotten that number, $170 million. So I'm not sure if lawmakers are still trying to debate what fee licenses will go at. And as for sports betting, there are many questions still for the framework and how it's going to work. Casinos won a part in this where, you can do your wagering in person, and casinos want that to happen at their locations. You can also do it online. So I think a lot of work still has to be put into these two ideas. A lot of the lawmakers that I spoke to on these two issues, they said, well, if Governor Pritzker really wants this, it's included in the budget, we have to get it done this year. So a lot of moving parts.
One of the things I found interesting is that the focus on sports betting, there was, unless I'm mistaken, no mention of any further casino expansion,
right,
which has been on the plate for like the last 20-some years.
Yeah, and as far as I can remember, too, last year, at least up to last year, this was a bigger sports betting was in one. Lawmakers wanted to include sports betting as part of a bigger gambling expansion bill. And I think that they're wanting to go a different route, just getting sports betting on its own for now.
And I wonder if that's because the casino industry and the horse racing industry and everybody else involved in gaming, the video terminals, they have not been able to get on the same page probably since George Ryan was governor.
I would just piggyback off of what both Charlie and Daisy were saying there, because the governor actually sort of addressed the point that he wasn't talking about these other areas. But, he said, expansion of gambling is a perennial effort in this state, and often these proposals get bogged down in regional disputes and a Christmas tree approach.
Mm-hmm.
One of the critiques I heard of, sort of the messaging aspect of the speech, right? Because ultimately, budget proposals are political messages. They're political documents. And one of the critiques I heard was that, parts of this felt like they were written by somebody who maybe didn't quite grasp the nuances and realities of Illinois politics. And as Charlie was saying, there's a reason that gambling approaches or gambling legislation often end up being Christmas trees, because there are so many competing interests. Those interests have a lot of money, and therefore they have a lot of say with legislators. Like it or hate it, that is the reality. And so I think that the governor may find, as he attempts to push sports betting, he may want to do that as a standalone thing, but there are going to be other people who perhaps do not see that as the best way forward.
And a lot of them often feel as though it's a one bite at the apple opportunity. So if a big, gambling proposal is going to pass, we want to be part of it. So let me ask
Christmas for gambling comes but once every decade.
Amanda, we've been hearing a lot about a structural deficit in the current year budget. Does the governor do anything to really address that?
I mean, I think it's a bit complicated to figure out. As Daisy said, there's a lot of moving parts in this budget. So there are some kind of big policy agenda items like legalizing recreational marijuana and having that be a revenue source. There's expanded spending, and then there's this pension change. So for me, I'm still trying to figure out what the structural deficit number is if we just held the line on everything. So if spending just changed, by inflation, if revenue, we didn't have any new revenue sources and we didn't change the pension contribution, what would that deficit look like? The kind of best that I could find is analysis done under the Rauner administration. They had projected about a $2.5 billion deficit for 2020.
And then also when it comes to revenue, we talked about that, but also is he making any cuts in this budget? Because he certainly isn't going to stand up and talk about a lot of that because it's not always the most popular thing among lawmakers. But are there cuts in this budget that we can really point to and say, hey, he's saving money here?
I mean, the real cut is the cut in the state's pension contribution. That's, the biggest spending item that I see being changed in the proposal.
If you go over the details, the the governor's speech, has, as was said earlier, is sort of like a political statement. Mm-hmm. The nitty-gritty is contained in the budget book, and it's, I think, 540 pages, a PDF file that you can access online. And then there are Excel files breaking stuff down even more minutely. But if you go through and look at all the lines, there are some cuts here and there. And in some instances, dollars, or I should say programs and services supported by general funds, are now going to be supported by other state funds as a way of shifting costs off the general funds into some of our 700 other funds. So there, here and there, bits and pieces of cuts, but nothing as significant as the pensions that Amanda referred to, and nothing that adding it all up amounts to a whole lot.
Let me ask you on that, Charlie, because we've heard for years about this shell game of taking money from different funds and, you know, moving things around. Is that what we're talking about here?
I suppose it depends on your perspective. If there's a service that is being funded by general funds that logically could be funded out of another revenue source, then no, I don't think it's necessarily a shell game. I think it's just a change in assessing how you're going to do it. I mean, years ago, part of the cost of the state courts were paid for with gasoline taxes, theory being the overwhelming number of cases heard by the circuit courts in Illinois deal with traffic violations. That changed, oh, probably 30 or 40 years ago, and now the courts don't get any gas tax money. And that was just a political or a policy decision, better put, a public policy decision that this makes more sense.
Well, education was a winner, right, Brian? I mean, as far as he's going to put more money into elementary, secondary education, and also higher education?
I mean, the elementary and secondary education, some of that is just sort of what has been baked into this funding compromise that was reached a couple of years ago that's supposed to go up every year, where the, you know, legislature agreed to change the way that money is distributed. There was an increase built into that. But you're right, there is some additional money. Higher ed is one he highlighted for a 5% increase. They had been looking for a 16% increase. So a mixed result for them, but higher ed has been held so low in terms of it's basically getting the same amount of money that it was in 2002. It really took a hit during the budget impasse a couple of years ago and has still not even reached the level, and even under this budget, I don't think it would reach the level that it was at before the budget impasse. So I think they're probably happy to have any increase. However, for students who count on MAP grants, the Monetary Award Program, which helps low-income students afford college and university in Illinois, those have been cut off and have run out. There have been far more people who wanted and qualified for those grants than were able to get them. It is not as much of an increase as the Board of Higher Ed was asking for, but Pritzker is putting some money, more money towards that. So just again, another example, as we heard House Republican Leader Jim Durkin say at the beginning of the show, more spending that the governor wants to do, beginning to pay down on some of his campaign promises.
Amanda, when we talk about J.B. Pritzker's budget plan here, just as we talked about Bruce Rauner and even Pat Quinn and going back, this albatross that's around governors' necks when they're trying to balance a budget, and lawmakers too, when they're trying to, you know, provide money for these services, the state of Illinois just has fiscal issues that are really, you know, cramping the style of these guys when they come in. I'm sure J.B. Pritzker would like to do some different things that he's not able to do because of the financial reality.
Yeah, and I think, so one thing to kind of think about is that prior to J.B. Pritzker becoming governor, we knew that there was a structural issue in Illinois' finances. This already existing structural imbalance was really exacerbated by the two-year impasse. That impasse caused a lot of financial wreckage and just compounded the problem. And yet, with the 2020 budget proposal, we're not kind of seeing an overhaul of addressing the structural issue. I mean, we're seeing a proposal for it in the graduated income tax, but again, that's kind of a two-year process. So it's an issue that's certainly still hampering the Pritzker administration and hampered the Rauner administration and hampered the Quinn administration.
And Charlie, I guess the question would be, is this about as good as you can do?
Well, I guess from my perspective, yeah, it is. And it's, as was said earlier, it's like a placeholder. And it's as if the governor is kind of placing all his eggs in the basket of, in 2020, voters will allow us to enact for the budget, which would be what, the budget of 2022, mm-hmm. a graduated income tax that will bring in significantly more money and enable us to address some of these structural issues. Now, there are other options that have been suggested by other groups. Civic Federation, for example, for the last several years has said, well, we should probably tax retirement income. That's not going to happen. It's more likely that I'll be the starting pitcher for the White Sox on opening day. And they talk about expanding our sales tax to include some services. That was nowhere in the budget. So,
just to jump
in. Oh, go ahead, man.
I was just going to piggyback on what you were saying, Charlie. And I think that, you know, again, there's this structural problem in Illinois. And I think one thing that could be really prudent is taking an overall look and overhaul of the revenue structure. And so why aren't we considering expansion of the sales tax base? Why aren't we considering, and I know this is going to make me very unpopular, but why aren't we considering taxing retirement income? As you said, we're kind of, J.B. Pritzker's putting all of his eggs in the basket of the graduated income tax. So what happens if that doesn't materialize? And what is the state going to do for the next 2 years? Again, his proposal has additional spending, and the way that this budget is balanced is through a combination of new revenue from new taxes, but also cutting the state's pension contribution. So how, you know, what do we do for the next 2 years, even if we think that a graduated income tax is going to materialize?
Just to piggyback off what Amanda said, I've said this before, but on that retirement tax question in particular, you know, that is not the most progressive way to tax or not tax elderly people, because there are some elderly people who are not fortunate enough to have retirement savings to get income from. They have to work, and they are paying income taxes right now. So you can imagine a system where maybe there was progressivity added to a retirement tax, and the first $50,000 to $100,000 of income wouldn't be taxed. And that would help both elderly people who have to work as well as those who do have retirement income. And the last thing I'll say is that, you know, one other option that Governor Pritzker could have pursued came from a guy named candidate J.B. Pritzker, which is adding some sort of through tax breaks, a sort of false or quasi progressivity to the flat tax in Illinois, maybe expanding the earned income tax credit, doing things like that. He talked about that as a candidate, but right after the election, he sort of shut the door and said, you know what, no, we're not going to do that this year. So there were other options to take a more, as Amanda said, systematic approach to the structural issues with Illinois' revenue.
But one of the things that I think is a good idea, and I was glad to see happen, was a suggestion that there be a tax on managed care companies to help support the Medicaid program. And as I understand it, and I don't know all the details, obviously, but it will be analogous to the tax that's now there for nursing homes and hospitals, the so-called granny tax on nursing homes, where the money is collected by the state, it's sort of laundered through the Medicaid program and gets federal reimbursement. So in essence, for every dollar that the industry contributes, it gets a dollar and a half back. And so I think that's sort of a no-brainer.
Well, we'll continue to watch this over the next few months, because we'll see if how many of his ideas can become law when they actually pass a budget later in the spring. Members of our broadcast today included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Daisy Contreras, and Amanda Cass. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. Production assistance for the program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.